Robert Dunn is a man who needs no introduction. So welcome to the podcast, Robert Dunn. Would be a horrible intro. But seriously, some of you might not know who Robert is, but you should. He is the host of Aging Wheels, a YouTube channel which gives an entertaining and informative look at little-known cars, their quirks, and the fact that it seems to be a perpetual cycle of shame, frustration, and guilt associated with owning and operating these vehicles. He also runs the cleverly named Underdone YouTube channel, where Robert shares some projects, tool and shop upgrades, woodworking videos, and more. That's all well and good, but most notably, Robert Dunn is arguably most renowned for his special guest appearance on Chad and Steve Haven podcast episode 27. Look it up, folks. It's a classic. And while you're at it, put your hands together and welcome back to the podcast, Robert Dunn.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm really glad you could come back because we've got a lot to catch up on here. First of all, your channel is killing it. I think it's doubled since the last time you were here. I think, Chad, what were the numbers, Chad? You were here like 6 months ago.
You were here just 6 months ago. You had about 160,000 subscribers, well over 200,000 now. And the same holding true on the other channel.
So, I live so in the moment, I didn't even realize it's grown that much.
The amazing thing, though, is it really the views that you get on your videos are really good. I mean, you're getting more views than subscribers on a lot of these videos. So it's just a lot of people really like watching your videos.
And I don't know what changed. During July, I had, for the first time in a long time, I had one video per week. And I thought maybe that kickstarted it. I don't know if it jump-started the algorithm, started recommending it to people or what. But just every video that month was one out of one. It just started escalating. And before that, I was thinking, well, my numbers are declining. Maybe I've already hit my peak, or, you know, those ridiculous thoughts that flow through your head. But in July, it just picked up hugely, and it hasn't really slowed down. I mean, my video output has slowed down, and I've slowed down, but the numbers haven't really, and I don't know what to make of it sometimes.
Is it different now when you write a video? Because now you know you're going to write something that is potentially going to be seen 250,000 times. And does that mess with the creative process? Or are you still kind of locked in? No, this is what I do.
It messes with it in a small sense, because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, it's because you put out one video a week. That's why your channel's on the rise. And now I feel this mild pressure to put out more content more frequently, even though with the scale of my project, that's not really possible. But it's also extremely motivating to know that if I work on something, put a lot of effort into it, a lot of people are also going to see it, and they're going to react positively to it. And that's extremely exciting.
You might be a good case study of that you don't need to produce content as much as a lot of people think, because there are certainly channels who do really well posting one video a month.
Yeah, Mark Rober is a good example of that.
Yeah, or we had Practical Engineering on this show, and he does it once a month, and he's always like on the trending page. Every time he posts a video, you know, it's like right there. And so I think as long as you produce something that people are actively waiting for. And one thing I noticed, though, is your videos are getting a lot longer.
Yeah.
And that seems to, maybe that's even helping. You're regularly posting 30 plus minute videos.
Yeah. My favorite comment on videos that are that long is, wow, I didn't realize how long this video was. I just flowed through it and it kept my attention the whole time.
Yeah.
As long as I can do that, then I'm totally okay with putting out long videos, because I like to watch long videos from my favorite creators.
Do you feel compelled to also try other things, shorter videos? Do you want to produce more content knowing that you have more eyes right now? Or do you like the thought of doubling down on, people are coming to see this, so I'm going to keep doing this?
Like I said, I have a little bit of pressure of putting out more content more frequently. So some of my bigger project ideas, I feel I'm inactively putting them on a back burner. Like my big bus project, I keep thinking I want to work on that. But if I want to work on that, that's going to easily wipe out 1 or 2 months. So instead of working on that, I stick to a smaller project, even though it'll probably take the same amount of time. So I don't know, it's hard to judge how long these projects are going to take, first of all, but it is affecting what I'm doing. I would like to put out some shorter videos, maybe some sort of filler content. I did one last month where I just talked about my tools, but even that one took 3 days to make. I would like to try to do the shorts. I'd like to start to get into shorts, maybe rehash some of my older videos, just walk through the cars that I have in the short format, just so I can get more content out on a more regular basis so my audience doesn't think I disappeared. Or for my new subscribers that come on that have never even seen the Trabant before, maybe they want to know about that in a short format. I don't remember what your original question was, but I rambled on there.
This is why we like the Robert Dunn channels, because it's just like, that's like watching one of your videos. You just kind of go through one thing to another, and we enjoy the process. The Yugo, recently you did a second, I think it was your second video on the Yugo upgrading this thing. And that, again, was probably a 35-minute video or something. But I can't imagine how much time goes into that, because throughout the video you'll reach a block where you need to order a part, and then I think, okay, well, now that you've got to wait however long it takes for that part to come in, and then just, so how long, like the most recent Yugo video, that was the gas tank one,
yeah.
How long did it take to make the entire video?
So that one was about 3 weeks, and if you pay close attention, well, you can't really notice it, but I was going to say, if you pay close attention to the clothes that I'm wearing, you can kind of see that I'm jumping around in time in that video. I tried to be a little more experimentative with how I organized the video in that one, because I don't remember what it was, but I had to order a part early on, and it was like the second task that I had started doing on it. So instead of waiting for that thing to arrive, I moved on to another one, but in the video, I tried to keep it chronological. So I ended up, in the editing, going back and reordering these clips in time. And it was quite complicated, and I had to edit the video as I was filming it to keep track of what I was doing. And yeah, it took me about 3 weeks. it takes a long time.
What percentage of that is editing? How long does the editing process take?
Not a terribly long amount of time with that Yugo video. I think that was 2 days total. I've gotten pretty efficient at the editing. That was also broken up into several days. So I spent like 4 hours one night, 4 hours another night, and then the final run through was a full day. I think I started at like 8 o'clock with the final run through and ended at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then ended at 6 p.m. And then I sent it off to sponsors for review.
Your editing has become really masterful. It's real. It is engaging, the way you keep that pace going. There'll be times when you're working on a piece and then all of a sudden, boom, 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 the pace picks back up again. And you do have a way of managing to keep the viewer engaged for that entire 30 minutes, which is kind of amazing. Do you think that... would you ever consider hiring an editor, or would that just be too hard to explain kind of what you're doing? And yeah,
it would be way too hard to explain. As I'm filming things, I'm putting the video together in my head and organizing the clips, and I'll do things like I'm talking at two places on the screen at the same time, and I would have to write that down and explain it to someone else if I wanted someone else to edit my videos.
You'd have to like storyboard it, and then you might as well just shoot it and do it, edit yourself, right?
Yeah. I've even stopped writing scripts because it's too much extra time to write down what I want to say ahead of time, instead of saying it, organizing it as I'm going in the edit, and then continue talking more, and then organizing that in the edit, and then talking more. It's just my approach anyway.
Do you have the bandwidth right now to explore new projects, or are you just kind of in a spot where you have enough existing projects to work on? And do you find that that might end up be challenging after a while, where it's you being so locked into having so many long-term projects already existing that it doesn't kind of give you some fresh new stuff to cycle in?
So I have a lot of ongoing projects right now, stuff that I can't wait to tackle. And I think that is the best problem to have, because a year or two ago, I didn't have enough to work on, and that's part of the reason why I started my second channel, is because I didn't know what to do for a video, and I couldn't come up with a video with any consistency, so I built my little wood shop, and I started making videos in there, and that helped fill the gap, not just for content production, but also my mental health, so I actually had something to do on a regular basis. But now that I have this backlog of projects, I'm excited, and I'm excited to get through them. I've got, four cars over there that need working on right now that I can look at, and I don't know when I'm going to have the time to work on them, and that's a great problem to have. When I run out of those things to work on, then I'll worry about it, but for now, I feel like I'm set.
So somebody listening to this podcast for the first time who didn't hear your first appearance on our show, and if you didn't hear it, go back and listen, please. Do yourself a favor. But if they are new, how do you describe aging wheels? What's the focus of your channel?
The simplest way I can put it is how I describe it on Patreon, entertaining vehicular content. As it started out with, I was going to do car reviews, and then I pretty quickly realized that that's not quite my bag. I'm not British enough, I guess. And then I got a Trabant several years ago. And it sort of, I naturally progressed, organically progressed into the weird car thing. I compare it to hardcore drugs. People get harder and harder into cocaine and heroin or whatever, but my hardcore drug is weirder cars. I just keep going back to find that fresh fix.
The Trabant was the gateway drug.
Yes, it was indeed.
You have an incredibly passionate audience who loves every single thing that you do. How many, I don't know if you pay to, I don't think any analytics could actually tell you this, but do you stop to think about how many of your audience are watching the things that you're doing in as aspirational or as like the type of people that are watching? It's like, well, here's a suggestion for you. Like the people who like kind of get it and understand the project from like the complicated sense that you're presenting it, or the people that are just kind of like following along and watching it for kicks and giggles.
I feel like it's about a half and half mix. I have no idea what the actual analytics are, but whenever I upload something like the go-kart project, converting a go-kart to electric, I got an interesting mix of people that totally understood what I was doing and were on board with it, and people that would comment, hey, I don't know what's going on in this video. It's way over my head, but I really enjoyed it. I feel like it's about a half and half mix there, especially even on Patreon, get about a half and half of, I just really like the personality and the entertainment of the content, but I have no idea what's going on, and the people that have in-depth technical knowledge of what I'm working on.
Your recent video on the Underdone channel was about the new dust separator that you made.
Uh-huh.
And one of the top comments on that, I think it was pretty good, was, this is a perfect balance of inspired brilliance and dangerous half-assery. Just say that's a really, it's like for that particular project, at least, I think that was a very good.
that was a fun project.
Yeah, you know, your second channel, the Underdone channel, also performs really well. You're on your way to your second silver play button here pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, that was a good surprise, too.
Yeah, it's all in your delivery, man. I mean, that you did a video on this mini table saw. Uh-huh. And when I say mini, I mean mini. This was one of the funniest, from a woodworker's point of view, this was one of the funniest videos you could watch. Tell us about that little bitty table saw.
Yeah, I was just walking through Harbor Freight, and I saw this little thing. I didn't know it existed. It has a 4-inch blade, the weakest motor I've ever seen. And I took a picture of it and sent it to my wife, and she said, buy it. I said, well, I don't. What do I need this for? Make a video of it. Okay. So I bought that. I made a video of it. Never done a video with just showing off a tool or anything like that before. And it's just, I don't understand what this thing was made for. I got a lot of people that were mad at me because I didn't cut specifically balsa wood on it, but If it's only good for cutting balsa wood, what's it good for?
Yeah, I mean, you could cut a balsa wood with a knife, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, and to put it into perspective, this thing is about like the size of a brick. I mean, it's really small. It is a very tiny table saw, but it looks like a real table saw, just only tiny. It's so funny.
The thing that drove me mad about is that it doesn't come with a fence, so I don't know how you're going to use it.
And a really crappy miter gauge.
Oh, yeah.
Not sure what. It's like such a novelty tool. I can't picture a single purpose for that thing.
No, I can't either. I ended up giving it to my mom.
Really?
She wanted it, so.
You tried cutting a tile with it. I think you said it took about 5 minutes to cut through a single tile.
It never gave up, though. I was proud of it.
Do you find it important to include the mistakes and failures into your videos?
Yes. From the beginning, I was just doing it because, well, I don't know, it seemed like a good thing to leave in, but I have received a lot of comments and emails specifically telling me, I appreciate that you show your mistakes and show what you did wrong, because a lot of woodworkers hide their mistakes and they'll just pretend like nothing happened and the audience thinks that they did it perfect the first time, but that is absolutely not the case. So now I make it a point to not only point out my mistakes, but show what I did wrong and add some self-deprecating humor in there as well. Because everyone makes mistakes.
It leads to comic gold. It's very true. How do you manage not to throw tools, and how much do you cut out that we don't see? Are you a swearer? It seems like on some of your cuts, you let, like, you know, the drill press down thing and it rattles around and there's a stop and I'm waiting to hear the F-bomb or something, but then you cut to something else. Do you cut a lot of stuff out, or do you just not say stuff like that?
I just don't say stuff like that. Stuff like that doesn't bother me. Especially when something goes spinning on the drill press, I usually end up laughing about it. As if I'm not injured, even if I'm only injured a little bit, then it's just humorous. Especially when something gets flung across the room or whatever. It's no reason to get mad about it. But I do get mad sometimes when I'm working on cars. Specifically recently, the Yugo, when I was taking out the gas tank.
Oh, that was amazing.
There was no avoiding getting angry about that. But it used to be a lot worse. I don't know what's exactly changed, but it used to be a lot more trigger happy when it comes to getting angry about being frustrated around working. I attribute it to two things. One, my shop now is air conditioned, which is the best luxury ever. And I'm on antidepressants too, so that probably helps quite a bit.
Well, I could tell a little bit of frustration with that gas tank seeping. And how long did it finally take you to get that thing? It looked like several hours to try to figure out how to get that in there.
The actual process of getting the gas tank in, just that part, was, I think, about an hour and a half. And I avoided that as long as possible. And then everything else after that was another day or so.
Somebody mentioned in the comments of that video that, well, clearly the car was built around the gas tank, you know? So describe that Yugo, and what is a Yugo for people who don't remember? I remember very well when a Yugo was like the laughing stock of cars when they came out.
Yeah, Yugo, named after the country that it was made in, Yugoslavia, which no longer exists, dissolved into like 9 different countries. It's just, a lot of people call it the worst car ever built. I don't think that's true, especially since I have some worse cars. I think it is the most disposable car ever made. They built them to be bought new and then thrown away when something goes wrong. They were very cheap. I think they were $39.95 or something like that when they came out in 1986, I think it was. And they were just cheap, basic cars that people would buy new, and they wouldn't last very long. They would throw them away and then get something else. It was supposed to be the replacement for the old Volkswagen Beetle. Never really panned out that way, but that was the idea.
So if that's not the worst car ever made, logical follow-up question is, what is the worst car ever made?
That I find to be a difficult question. I think I want to say the Trabant.
Everything comes back to the Trabant.
But everyone says that. And I don't really think it is bad, but I don't think it's the worst car ever made. Because it was built with a purpose, and that's to be basic transportation for absolutely everyone. And it does that. I was going to say, well, it does that. But I've got the Wego sitting over here in the corner, and it was not built with that purpose. It was built to be this new piece of technology that would revolutionize the electric car game or whatever. And it is just a writhing pile of garbage. So I think if we go with a ratio of intended purpose to build quality, I think the Wego is worse than the Trabant. There are, I'm sure, many other cars that are worse than that, but they're probably one-offs or home-built cars, or they exist in the Lane Motor Museum and nowhere else.
So the Wego, that's that the black one, kind of looks like a more modern car. Is that what we're talking about?
It's the one that looks like a smart car clone.
Oh, okay, that one. Okay, because I know recently you had another electric car here. The stupid electric car keeps breaking.
Yeah, that's a different one.
Okay, that one had 4,000 miles on it and was just riddled with troubles.
Oh yeah, it's broken even more since then.
And what was that? What is that car?
That's a Coda.
Oh, a Coda. Okay.
Yeah, that one, I was astonished by the build quality of that one. That one was, the company went all out on the marketing. I saw one that was vinyl wrapped with an oil drill on the side, and it said end dependence on it. A little bit optimistic.
What year was that car?
That one's a 2012, I think. Yeah. That was the first and only year of them, 2012.
You did a aging wheels fleet update. I think it was a couple months ago. Has anything changed from that? I think you had like a dozen cars then.
Yeah, I still have exactly the same number of cars. I haven't sold or bought anything. Like I said earlier, I've got a good backlog of projects, and I don't really want to get anything new until I start diving into the projects that I already have. That, and I've run out of space completely.
Do you have a 3D printer yet?
Yes.
Oh.
How has that experience been?
Absolutely incredible. Not only do I have a 3D printer, I got the company Stepcraft to send me a CNC router. So I've been playing with both of those a lot. I feel like it's just totally changed the way I make things now.
Does that resonate with you? Like I saw when I first heard about like the concept of it, like literally make whatever you want. All you need to do is figure out how to like design it in a thing, and then you can make it at home. Yeah. Like that is for most makers, like, wow, this is just true independence. I don't need to worry about, you know, sourcing out some weird part.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't expect it to be as good as it is. I got an Ender 3. It's one of the cheapest ones available, and I mean, it has just revolutionized the way I make things. Like I made, just last week, I made a spot welder. I put a video out on my second channel. And I didn't have to do any fancy carving on the table saw or whatever. I just modeled up a handle for it in Fusion 360 and then 3D printed it, and I just had a part. It was incredible.
That'll probably come in handy for making, I assume, car parts that are just you can't find anymore. Is that right?
Yeah, hopefully so, especially with the Coda, because I've got, well, I do have two spare Codas, but the plastic parts in some of the pieces are just irretrievably broken, and they're broken in all of them. So I'm sure I'll have to start modeling some little intricate parts here and there and then 3D print those if I want to create anything new.
Is the best advice for a Coda owner to have two spare Codas just in case, like two backup Codas to like pick off of at any given point? How often do you reach out to your audience for information? I was watching a video and there was a solution that you were getting to. I think it was for designing the fins on the fan for the dust collector. And you reach out to Patreon. How often do you reach out to your audience to find out their input or get some alternative takes on something?
Not incredibly often. When I do it, I reach out to my Patreon audience because it's a lot more filtered and I won't get just a bunch of people guessing. But I think I've only done it twice. I did it with the acrylic fins on the dust collector. I don't remember if I was asking them for a way to bend the acrylic. No. I was just asking for a way to make the fins. And the other one was my go-kart. It wasn't working, and I had no idea why. So I reached out to my Patreon audience in the hopes that some of them or any of them had experienced anything like this before and could help me out. And they did. I didn't get the problem fixed because it turned out to be basically unfixable with the stuff that I had. But my Patreon audience has really been handy for that sort of thing in the finite number of times that I've used them.
I get the feeling that on a lot of these cars, there really isn't a lot of resources to find help with. A Yugo, if you need to fix a part, you're basically going to have to figure that out on your own.
With the Yugo specifically, the customer base, the what do you want to call it, the fan base is bigger than you would expect, and they're a devoted bunch of people, so much so that it becomes a little bit of a problem at times. But with stuff like the Wego or the Coda, you have to know a person that is an expert in that topic. Otherwise, you're going to have to figure it out yourself. And with specifically electric cars, you can't really figure it out without diagnostic tools or someone who knows exactly what's going on. So it can be troublesome sometimes.
Do you have a preference for working on electric cars versus carburetor combustion engines?
No, mechanical stuff is more intuitive to diagnose when it's broken. The electric stuff, I like the technology behind it. I like driving electric cars. I like most everything about them, but sometimes fixing them can be a bit of a pain because you'll just have a warning light that comes on. You have no idea why. And if you don't have the diagnostic equipment, then it's just, you're just completely in the dark.
I think that was one of the problems you experienced on the Coda, was that the information panel just stopped working on you.
Yeah, actually, after that video came out, the speedometer also stopped working. It's not pegged at zero, though. It's pegged at 85 miles an hour.
Oh, good. Whoa. Well, there you go. Yeah, there was another speedometer on the Yugo where you fixed the speedometer on that. Mm-hmm. And I actually, see, this is the kind of thing I find really interesting, because this is the kind of thing I would never even attempt that in a million years. Because for one thing, you took the instrument panel off this. I guess it's a cluster. I don't know what you call it. And took it off, and you completely disassemble the whole thing. Mm-hmm. See, I would never be able to get that all back together again. Does that ever intimidate you, wondering, how am I going to remember how to put it all back together?
No, because with something like that, it's already broken. That's sort of an AVE methodology. If it's already screwed, you can't screw it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's, I like to take things apart like that and just to see how they work. And if I can fix something while I'm in there, that's just an added bonus.
Yeah, I like how you were able to fix it with just, you know, there's some parts that just maybe need some epoxy to hold them in place. You know, that's fine.
I was surprised how simple that was.
But it also taught me kind of how a speedometer works, you know, and how the odometer was still working, right? But the speedometer wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I learned that too when I took that apart.
You also did a recent video where you gave a tour of all of your tools. Mm-hmm. And my question is, why doesn't Ryobi sponsor your
that was
channel?
That's a lot of green.
It's a lot of green, sir.
I don't know, but I've kind of stopped caring at this point. When I made that video, I thought, I'm not going to even attempt to get a sponsorship. I'm just going to give my completely honest opinion on all these things that I have. Ryobi didn't reach out to me at all after that video. I had a lot of people, a lot of my fan base that were tagging them on Twitter constantly, and I thought, you guys are going to annoy them. What I did have, I mentioned Harbor Freight in that video, and I had the director of marketing, or whatever he was, he reached out to me and said, I've sent your video off to the review board or whoever controls that sort of thing, and cross your fingers, you might get some free stuff out of it. And then I had Benpack, the company that makes my lift, send me a quick jack just because I mentioned it. It was the best thing ever.
So what are you going to be mentioning in some upcoming videos?
Nothing. I don't know. I feel weird going for that sort of thing. If it happens, it happens. And it's a nice bonus, but I don't want to start trying to get things. Like the Stepcraft CNC router, I didn't mention it in any videos or anything. But what I did do was I just emailed them. I contacted another YouTuber that got a Stepcraft CNC from them, and I said, hey, do you have an email address, a guy that I can specifically email? And he gave it to me. I emailed them, and they said, sure. And now I have a CNC router. Being a YouTuber is kind of imposter syndrome sometimes.
This is a bit of a selfish question, but you have that little Ryobi. Speaking of Ryobi, you have a Ryobi cleaner,
the
floor cleaner,
the sweeper.
But you said it wasn't. That's a discontinued tool or something. Yeah. I wanted to ask you the selfish part of the question is I want that because I think it's really cool, but I don't know where to find one.
So I looked online after saying that it was discontinued. I didn't do much research for that video and I can't find it for sale anymore, but Ryobi has since changed it. And on their website, it's listed as coming soon to Home Depot, whatever that means.
There you go.
It maybe is not discontinued, which would be awesome because I love that thing.
I feel like I'm doing an ad for Ryobi here. We're not getting anything for this because I use Ryobi tools. And I think that, man, if there were ever a tool brand that kind of gets a bad rap from people, it's considered kind of, that's the crappy tool. And it's not. I mean, it's for what I do with them. There's certain tools that aren't really good. I tried their table saw, it was utter disaster. It was horrible.
I've got a drill press that's complete crap.
Yeah, but for the most part, I mean, like their drills and impact drivers and everything, they were great. And man, the price is right on those things.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the Milwaukee tools are basically the same thing, and the price is almost double in some cases. So it's like, why would you do that? This is going to work fine for me.
So, do you ever hear from the tool fanboys? You know, because sometimes you get these, I get those, like, you know, you're not a real craftsman or a woodworker if you use Ryobi.
Yeah, I've had a few comments like that. A lot of people telling me you should get Makita. Don't mess around with this green junk. Like, oh, okay, whatever.
Okay, yeah, I'm putting cars back together. What are you doing?
I'm actually using my tools.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever wondered about what you would be doing if you didn't have a YouTube channel?
Oh my God, constantly.
So I figured out what it might be.
One of the reasons that I started uploading more consistently and pushing myself to do YouTube was because I hated my job at the time. So if I didn't have this outlet, I have no idea what I would do, and I wouldn't have anywhere near the amount of time or money that I have to work on these projects. I have no idea. Also, I don't know if this YouTube thing falls through, which it inevitably will at some point in time. I don't know what I'm going to do next. So that's a problem for future me.
Follow-up question, what's your backup plan?
I don't have one. My wife is looking for a job so that she can start to put away money for school and go back to college, figure out to do something. She doesn't really have any set goal in mind. It was architecture. Now it's anything else that doesn't take 12 years of schooling. So she wants to be my backup plan financially. But other than that, I don't really have one. If worse comes to worse, I could sell all of my cars and get at least $5.
It'd be good for a couple of weeks.
At least pay my mortgage for a month.
You've been doing the sponsored spots, though. Mm-hmm. Probably doing pretty well with those. You do a really good job on those. Most channels, when the sponsored spot, I start to smell that sponsored spot coming up. It's like, click, 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 click. I'm through it.
Yeah.
Yours are great. I can tell you really spend time on those, and they're real fun.
You also ambush people, which I like. Like Steve was saying, like there's none of that talk into like, and that brings us to, I know. Yeah. You just throw right into it. Before I know it, I think it's a joke, but it's like, no, this is the ad. Well,
yeah, that's my main goal with those is to make something that people want to watch all the way through. And I'm sure the advertisers like that too. Keeps eyes on their ad.
Yeah, it must take a lot of time, though, to put those things together. You do the talking to yourself. I don't know what you call that, but I think it's really fun.
Surprisingly, no. That takes, they're not very long ads, but they don't take me all that long. I just write the script for them. It's just a quick little back and forth. I'll revise it just a couple times, and then I come out and film it. Like the last ad I did in the Yugo video, that only took me like half a day, and I actually filmed the ad before I got on the call with the ad agency to tell me what they wanted from the ad.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, nice. That was a Squarespace ad, right?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Everything I'm assuming has been received okay from the brands. They usually love it when people take such a fun lighthearted approach to
an yeah, with,
integration like
with
that.
With that last ad specifically, I got some weird feedback from the company. This was before they saw my ad style and before they saw my ad, so maybe that was the reason. But the one specific lady kept telling me, well, why don't you engage with your audience and ask them what website you should make and all of these really typical ad things. And it's like, that's
Stop. A
single ad I've made, have you?
I always love it when they try to give advice because they don't know anything about your ad or your audience or anything.
Yeah.
It's like YouTube. When YouTube gives out advice, they're always like, make sure you always tell your viewers to subscribe and hit the, have you probably never had told people to smash a like?
No, button. I think I said subscribe one time, and it may have been in my second channel for my main channel or something like that. People aren't 5 years old. They know. They
want. That's so true.
How else do you explain all those subscribers, Robert? How else do you explain all those subscribers? Unless they're being specifically told to subscribe to a channel, they don't know what to do.
I guess one exception to that is my actual 5-year-old. He wouldn't know to hit the subscribe
right.
button.
But he wouldn't be
let
watching
alone
your
smash
videos.
It.
Yeah.
When you were on last 6 months ago, you were saying you were just getting to the point where you're starting to care about thumbnails, or at least thumbnails a little bit more than you were before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was starting to pay off. 6 month update on the thumbnail design conversation.
Hey, they're looking good.
Oh, thanks. I still don't know what I'm going to do with each and every thumbnail, but I've just kept with the minimalist approach on Aging Wheels. I typically go with, I highlight the thing that I'm talking about. Sometimes I have sort of a storytelling aspect, like me crouched over the Yugo and saying, I can't get this to work or whatever. And the rest of the background is given a white tint and blurred out. And with underdone, still minimalist approach, whatever I'm building or talking about is right there. There's no background. It's just pure white. And it seems to be working for me. I usually add some text in there, usually for some sort of story building or just obviously, what is this thing that I'm looking at?
Do you switch them out and try like other things? Or are you like, I commit to one and
I just commit to one. I never have a second idea. So I just commit to one and just leave it. If it does well, it does well. If it doesn't, well, I wouldn't have known the other way.
It seems like there's a big surge right now of everybody trying to up their semi-clickbait titles ever since the Veritasium video came out.
I've been falling somewhat victim to that.
You kind of have to, don't you?
You kind of have to. I try to pitch mine as sort of the storytelling aspect or asking a question that needs to be answered by the video or just making it something ridiculous. Like with the spot welder, I said I made a spot welder using an old microwave and excessive mahogany. Something silly. It's just whatever pops into my head. I don't think about it all that much.
Why do you think a whole bunch of people were so interested in powering the go-kart with a used car alternator? Is that an example of like, oh, that was kind of an interesting like idea, so I'll go and watch it? Or is it such a crazy concept that that's the appealing thing? Do you stop to think about what the appealing stuff is, or do you just put it out there?
With that one specifically, I just kind of put it out there because I just wanted to make a project using a used car alternator as a motor. And that was sort of the only thing that made that go-kart project really different. So I just kind of went with it. I haven't really thought about why anyone would be interested in it. But I tried to explain it as well as I could in that video because I also didn't really know what I wanted that video to be. I wanted it to be more than a project. I wanted to have some sort of educational value. So in that video, I did explain, I think, fairly in depth of how not only an alternator would work as a motor, but how these three-phase motors work at all. So what was the original question?
Almost 400,000 views, and the videos, you know, surrounding that are 100,000-150,000 views. So it's clearly something about it, but I can't, like, it's not a keyword. It's not people just being like,
yeah, because
oh,
when I watched it, I don't really, the title, can I power this go-kart with a used car alternator? I guess because I know those words, but I don't really know what it means.
That's so it.
I'm curious. You know, I'm like, I don't know.
And it made me watch the video, and that's it. And that's why I was getting at, do you think it was maybe the question title? Because it, like, I don't know any of those words, but I was like, yes, I should find out if he can.
I don't know. It could be the storytelling aspect, asking a question that can be answered by the video. It could be people with the technical knowledge, somewhat technical knowledge of an alternator, and they wanted to see how that converts to a motor. Maybe they just wanted to see an electric go-kart. I have no idea.
I think it is your storytelling, and I think that's with all of your videos, and I think that is really where your strength lies, and that's why if you can get people just to click on a video of yours, they will be engaged from the start. And I think it's just, you seem to have just so much fun. I don't know how much you edit out the gas tank, but maybe that wasn't so much fun, but it seems like you have a lot of fun making those videos, and it really comes across, like you're test driving the Yugo, for instance, and just laughing at how ridiculous that steering is pulling on that. And I was laughing just watching. I'm like, I just feel like I'm in your shop alongside this guy for this ride. It's really fun.
Yeah. I mean, I the only projects I work on are what I want to work on. And I think that's the end benefit of that, is people get to see me doing exactly what I want to do. And the downside of that is my channel goes off theme quite often, both of my channels. But I mean, the views stay up and people seem to stay engaged and like what I'm doing. So I'm not concerned about the downside of that. I just keep doing what I'm doing.
It's the perfect kind of YouTube channel too, where you're able to reach those people who aren't into cars. Otherwise, you're just a niche channel. If you're a mechanic showing you how to replace a gas tank in a Yugo, nobody wants to watch that.
Yeah.
But if you have an entire story and that's a real stumbling block, a hurdle you had to get through, then everybody can watch it. It's real fun.
Yeah. I would never put out a video that is titled something like how to replace a Yugo or how to make this thing work. It's not what I'm doing, first of all, but no one would click on it, second of all.
Do you have a very frustrating part of the process that you hate the most?
Yeah, actually, I hate script writing with a passion. It's not that I hate the process, but it is the thing that I procrastinate the most. And any of my non-project videos used to be completely scripted out. But since I procrastinate on them so much, I decided to start trying to tailor the process to that. So instead of scripting the video ahead of time, what I tried with the tool tour video was I had these things in my head that I wanted to talk about and a basic generic order of how I wanted to present them in. So I went out to the shop and I recorded, like, I don't know, maybe what would have been a written page. And then I took that footage inside and I edited it together. And then I came back out and filmed some more and then edited that together and so on until I had a complete storyline. And then I could go back through and add anything that needed to be added or change anything that needed to be changed. And it was probably more inefficient than writing a script to begin with. But since I'm so slow at writing the scripts, it probably turned out to be the same amount of time. But yeah, definitely the writing is the part I hate the most.
You did a live event also recently, I think like last month or the month before. How what was that experience like? You did it with an air conditioned suit.
Oh, that was great. Awesome. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man suit.
Well, that was an interesting experience. YouTube's live streaming interface isn't quite as intuitive as I thought it was going to be.
I agree.
So I just hit a button and suddenly I was live and I had a mild panic. I did that. That was the second attempt, the live stream that actually went public. The first one I hit live. It was suddenly live and I went into a panic until I realized that it was unlisted. So that saved me a little bit.
All of a sudden you start seeing those chat coming up and you're like, oh people are watching.
Yeah, exactly. And the chat came so fast and I had no idea what I was doing and I was just rambling the whole time. Just mildly overwhelmed for the entirety of it, but thankfully my internet cut out and ended it early.
I was going to ask you about that. It just like ended. That's what's happened.
I don't know if it was actually the internet that went out or my streaming app that froze, or if one caused the other. But suddenly I got a few comments that said, where'd you go? And my wife is in the room at the same time. She said, yeah, it's not loading for me either. And then I opened up the OBS, open broadcast software, or whatever it's called, and it was frozen. I don't know what happened, but.
Well, that's the end of this live stream.
Are you thinking about trying it again, maybe? Or
oh, yeah, I'm just going to try it again. I don't know. I probably have a limited success rate. For being on live stream for half an hour, I got $600 in donations.
Wow.
That's just amazing. Blown away by that. And of course, your mind starts going, well, if I do this every week, but no, it would lose its thrill after a while.
I find doing live streams so exhausting.
Yeah.
It's because you're just like constantly on, and it's just a different, I'm always worried about it. I'm going to say something really stupid or awkward or something I probably shouldn't say and just the fact of trying to keep up, you can't keep up with the chat on those things. You really need a second person. Kind of
you do need a second person. And later on in that live stream, my wife came in and she was going to start relaying just the super chats to me so I could pay attention to whatever I was talking about. But she came in too late and then the internet died. But I think if I was going to do it again, I'd have her sit in the background and just yell super chats at me. And then everything else would, I don't know. I guess I would just talk off the top of my head. That's why I haven't done a second one yet. One is because my software crashed and I would like that to not happen again. But also I don't know what I would do in a live stream. That's why I positioned the first one next to the bus in my marshmallow suit.
You could do some sanding.
You just, yeah, in the suit.
Just
and dance.
Suit up Tuesday.
Describe that suit. Is that just a one and done thing? You kind of put on the suit, tried it out, and it worked for that? Or is that something you would actually use? You could describe what it is. It's a suit to cool you off.
It's a painter's canvas suit, just a little onesie that I got from Home Depot, and I hot glued an air conditioning duct, like a dryer disconnect, to the back of it, and then I made up a little box that sticks on the front of a little portable window air conditioner that I had lying around, and I made myself an air-conditioned suit. And I actually used that several weeks before when it was super hot. It was still super hot in my shop, but when it was super hot in the shop to get some work done, and it worked pretty well. That live stream where I wore it was actually the last time that I've worn it. I have not worked in that thing since then. So it was sort of the end of life for it, seems like.
What are some of the projects that we can expect to see coming up? The ones that you can talk about. Give us some exclusives.
Well, right next to me, I have this. So I got the CNC router, and I had some leftover acrylic. So I made, this is going to be meaningless for audio only people, but I've got this huge bank of battery cells. This is going to be for the go-kart. And this is only half of it. So I've got all of these cells sandwiched between these two pieces of acrylic here that I cut out in the CNC, and I've been working on, this is what I've been doing all day, all day every day for the past week, is making battery boxes. So I made one, again on the CNC. It's this silver painted thing, it's got a fan vent in one end, and the batteries fit in the top, but I didn't like it very much. Sorry to audio only listeners. So I made this second one out of steel. I painted it yellow to match the go-kart, and the walls are going to be made of this clear acrylic. It's cloudy here because there's film over it. Anyway, that's what I've been working on all week, is just a basic battery box for the go-kart, because that's the project that I'm currently working on. It's probably going to take me another couple of weeks, and I'm probably going to have to put a filler video out in the meantime, because I've got a sponsorship that's, they want it done by the end of the month, and that's looking like it's maybe not going to happen. And then after that, I'm going to work on the cars that need work. The Coda, the Yugo, the Robin, the everything.
You going to get back to the bus?
Yes, I'm planning to get back to the bus when it starts getting cooler outside. I'll probably have at least 3 months of time to work in the shop when it's not blazing hot in there. So hopefully I can make some real progress on it, and then I can finally put out a video on that and stop being asked by everyone, when are you going to work on the bus again?
I fell right into that. When are you going to do the bus, Robert? When are you going to do the bus?
It's only been 2 years since I touched it.
And how about for your other channel? Anything new coming up on that?
I'd like to make a table for my CNC and do some other small shop work, but I don't have any big projects planned for that. Since I've gotten a real flow with my main channel, I haven't been in the woodshop very much. I've done a couple things here and there, and I'll probably continue to do a small few things. And I bought some just ridiculous tools off Amazon to make some short little videos for my second channel. But other than that, nothing big planned.
Do you have any problems dealing with the pressure that you mentioned you kind of feel now to make the content, or are you kind of coming to terms with all this extra? And you even mentioned, you know, now you got to get a video out because a sponsor is attached to it. And yeah. Does all of that stuff just add up?
It does. Last month I had a little bit, not meltdown, but pressure culmination. It wasn't too severe or anything, but I had signed a contract with a sponsorship that I was going to have 4 videos with this sponsor in 2 months. And I did one and then got the odd feedback that I mentioned, and they wanted more of them, 3 more specifically. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. So I sent them an email saying, hey, I'm really sorry. And I was afraid that they were just going to drop me entirely, but they understood entirely and said, that's okay. You don't have to do these. If you decide that you have an idea and you want to put out these 3 other videos in the future, that's cool. We're still going to pay you for the one you did. And that just immediately alleviated all of that pressure.
Wow, that's great.
I can handle 1 sponsorship a month, and especially if my deadline is as wide as an entire month. But once it starts piling up like that, I found out that I cannot handle that.
Well, and that's when a lot of YouTubers just start putting out crap content.
Yeah.
Because they just want to get something out there, anything.
Yeah, that tool video that I made was intended to be just a filler video so I could have a sponsorship attached to it, but I decided that I wanted to do the video anyway, and that's after I decided that I'm not going to do that sponsorship anymore, and it turned out fine.
Well, Robert, we're really glad you could join us again for your second appearance on the Chad and Steve Have a Podcast.
Thank you for
podcast.
Having me.
Yeah, we're going to have you on a third time now, because, and then I'll have to ask you about the bus again. I expect to see some sort of an update on that. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how the Yugo turns out too. You're really tricking out that Yugo there. It's like a different car almost.
Oh yeah, it's already a different car. I've already picked a new name for it. I'm going to call it the ST, the Serbian Terror.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting all the lights. You switched all the lights over to LEDs, and you got a little... It looks really cool. I mean, as far as a Yugo can look.
Yeah. It looks weirdly squatty, but yeah.
And I want to thank everybody listening to this podcast, and be sure and join us again next week. See you then.